Hey everyone, welcome to season 4. I know, I'm excited too. Ignore the sounds, but by this point, if you're listening, you've learned to ignore my background sounds. From my squeaky office chair to, I don't know, ceiling fans and dryers that I've desperately tried to edit out, but you know, I'm not very good at that. So, we made it. My baby is now about 10 months old, and we're going back to weekly episodes. And there's going to be some fun, different stuff. We're almost done with James Bond, of course, and when we're done with Bond, that part of it will kind of fade away, though we'll probably have some one-offs with the Bond guys one last time before we put that on the shelf to return when the new Bond movie comes out. We also have a new TV version where we watch some of the cartoons and TV shows we grew up watching called Myopia Mornings. Overall, I'm really excited about this year, this new season. We've scheduled it out with some possible surprises along the way, and we're really hoping that you guys help us out, share, talk about it, pass it around. We want to recruit. We want to grow. This is the year we're going to just, you know, really take hold. So please enjoy. This week on Myopia, Defend Your Childhood, I couldn't bring myself to watch the 2007 animated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. So we're hopping on a different train. Our second episode was Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. So this week on Myopia, Defend Your Childhood, we return with season 4 with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Excellent!
Now, a motion picture so grand, so magnificent, and so vast, it spans 7,000 years.
No way!
Yes way!
But it starts with Bill.
I'm Bill S. Preston!
Who is Joan of Arc?
And Ted.
Noah's wife?
We're in danger of flunking most heinously tomorrow.
A force from the future.
Can we go anywhere we want at any time?
You can do anything you want.
Is putting history at their fingertips.
Let's reach out and touch someone.
They're traveling through time.
How's it going, royal ugly dudes?
Put them in the Iron Maiden.
Excellent!
Execute them.
Bogus. How's it going, dude?
Spectre, stay clear.
And they're making a big impression.
Historical babes.
Now they're home.
Buddy, get together. Remember who your buddy is.
To trash the 20th century.
We got a live one here.
Keanu Reeves, Alex Winter, Napoleon.
We're from history.
Billy the Kid.
Oh my God.
Joan of Arc. Sigmund Freud.
Tell me about your mother.
You a musician?
Beethoven.
Genghis Khan!
Abraham Lincoln.
Party on, dudes!
Socrates. George Carlin.
We're history.
If you guys are really us, what number are we thinking of?
69, dudes!
Bill and Ted's...
Excellent! Excellent!
Excellent Adventure.
Party on, dude.
My name is Brian Foster.
Everything you know is wrong. Got that?
Now, the reason that I'm calling is because I have begun to suspect you don't have any ladybugs in your freezer.
Hey cuz, Roy here. So about your car.
The darkness was never empty.
There's this presence in my head.
But I'm pretty sure that the book was confiscated by cats.
You're damn right we find a lot of bodies when Foster is around.
And some people call me the Night Blogger.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood, the first episode of season 4.
Woo!
We did it. Yeah. So as is tradition, we kick someone off who was here originally and then have people who've been there the longest. I think, Matt, you were on the first episode.
Yep. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And you've been on all the anniversary episodes since.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Steve, you were on, I believe, the second.
Yeah.
And every episode since.
And we had to cast someone into a volcano so I could be here, so I'm very appreciative that you all made that sacrifice.
And the ghost of Scott is here. He was the one we cast into the volcano. And then, of course, I believe Daniel, who currently holds the records for the most myopia episodes other than myself. I've been on all but one.
Do you have a belt?
He's been all but three, I believe.
Oh, wow. I stopped keeping track after, what was it, Ferngully, probably. I'm just like, all right, I'm here
now. Your name is Betty. The logic is erratic.
Well, I mean, that's why
it's my not wife too late to cast you in the volcano, Matt.
That's why my wife doesn't do the show anymore. Fern Kelly as well, so we switched them up.
Potato in a jacket.
What?
He's still making up rhymes as I guess it's Robin Williams. That's his rap.
Yeah,
yeah.
As opposed to Tim Curry's song later, which is being a big fart cloud. I think.
Do you remember? I just realized something depressing. When we started this, Robin Williams would have still been alive.
But not for long.
Aw.
Well, I mean...
Yeah. I actually watched that TV show he was on in that final year called The Crazy Ones.
Oh, that was the one where he had like a... He was like the put-upon father, right?
Yeah, him and his daughter ran an ad agency.
Oh, I did watch some of that. And it was, frankly, it was not bad.
Yeah, it was just sort of
a
whatever.
Sitcom-y. It was yeah. like watching Big Bang Theory or something. It's inoffensive. It's kind of stupid, mm-hmm. but it's not bad. It's the way my parents spend an evening together. So a couple things that are different this season. First of all, it's the fourth season. If you're listening, please be listening. Oh, please. Join the Facebook group. Email us at myopiapodcast. If you have a movie for us to do, send it to us. We're listening and we're growing. So please, we'll have contests coming up later. But second, we have things coming down the pipe. We have a spinoff coming up that we'll talk about at the end. And I can already tell you next week's episode. That's right. Starting this season, we'll be going back to weekly episodes. Yeah. But without further ado, this week on Myopia Defender Childhood, we learned that sometimes when you make a buddy comedy, only one of you ends up with a career. We watched Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I'm Nick Hoffman, the host of Myopia Defender Childhood. And on panel tonight, we have
Daniel Esquire.
The wild Matthew W. Quinn.
You guys took both of them.
I'm the dad.
I'm George Carlin.
Don't you mean Rufus?
Steve-O's here, folks. Bear with me.
So we did 1988's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And for those of you who are listening at home and, of course, following along, noting that since our first episode, as Matt already pointed out, was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, we've been doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies. And though Matt pointed out, in 2007, they had an animated movie which now qualifies. I refuse to watch it.
But there's no Michael Bay involved.
We'll get to Transformers at one point, Mr. Quinn. However, our second episode being Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, I thought it was perfectly appropriate to do a kind of we all love this movie, so we just have nothing else to talk about other than how much fun this movie was to do.
2007 was a
whoa! Time.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Remember when Obama wasn't elected yet?
I remember.
That was the year I graduated from college, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, boy.
A very bodacious year.
It was curvy.
It
was most significant
and unprecedented.
We're just gonna be throwing out 80s slang this entire time.
Please, first of all, it's not real 80s slang. This is the pretend 80s slang that people who lived in Ohio thought people in California actually said. And second of all, don't encourage any of this because it's all
whoa.
You know what we should do? We should end this with Frank Zappa's Valley Girl.
Valley Girl, she's a valley. That's his. Anyway.
Hello.
Mr. Sudsies, as my phone calls you, when I tell Siri to text Daniel Sudsies, she goes, I'm calling Daniel Sudsies. I made her
that's
English.
How Siri...
It's a little sexier. Daniel, can you give us a plot synopsis?
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K in this movie. So, Bill.
Is that
Prest-
where they got the name for Stranger Things?
It might
I really
be.
Hope so.
I hope so too.
It's set in 88 too, and then
82, 83?
Whoa, it's a prequel.
Whoa.
I'd like to think their first writer's meeting, that's all they had. Is that long?
Well, Bill Preston Esquire and
Ted Theodore Logan.
Oh, that's how it goes. Ted Theodore Logan the third, I believe.
I've memorized this movie, so if you get something wrong, I will correct you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
They need to do a history report, or else Ted will be shipped off to military school in Alaska. This is very bad for the future, because apparently their heavy metal band Wild Stallions with a Y is meant to align the planets and bring about peace and harmony to the world. So Rufus, that's George Carlin, brings a time machine back to help them with their report. So they use said time machine to go throughout history, meet the world's most totally bodacious leaders, dude. And that's pretty much it. It's their own little Doctor Who adventure.
So what happens to Bill if he fails? Nothing?
Nothing. Well, he's got Missy at home, his hot stepmom.
Hot stepmom.
I think his dad is more permissive because Ted's dad married
a woman that's like 3 years older than his son.
Right. They were. She was the senior when they were freshmen, and apparently Ted asked her to prom. Was that the line?
Yeah, that was the line.
So the movie opens on a space sphincter. And then there's like a 4 minute sequence of this like diamond thing flying.
It was like a diamond butt plug that came in.
Yeah.
And this was like a James Bond intro, right? Where you've got just an object that's rotating awkwardly. And it's like, where the hell is this going?
Is that a Bond opening or a Bond sex scene?
I believe he's attempting re-entry, sir.
Oh.
So this movie is 89. And so we have, first of all, some of the worst CGI that's ever lived. Unapologetically.
Yeah, it was charming.
I liked it, actually.
Better than Spawn?
No.
No, Spawn is much better. And we have a... Well, this movie is, on one hand, a perfect script-writing movie, right? Everything that is set up pays off. It's all cyclical. They bookend the movie with them playing instruments. They don't learn anything, and they're perfectly okay not learning anything. And everything that, I mean, the there's a timer that is set up, and it pays off at the end. Like, this is a perfectly written movie in how bad it is.
Plus, the characters are so stupid that there's no chance of them actually being shocked or horrified by what they're seeing.
And the only thing that you can pull away from this is interesting characters.
Mm-hmm. And Joan of Arc apparently would have made a great aerobicizer.
Yeah, she had enthusiasm for days.
Oh, yeah.
She was killing it.
So where do you want to go from here? We can kind of talk about this.
Well, we need to start with Carlin's opening about this future, right?
We do.
So George Carlin walks into this movie and narrates it like it's a Universal Studios ride, and he's the guy who's like, oh my god, we need to go back and rescue Terminator 2 from extinction, or whatever.
So he's Skipper Dan?
He's exactly Skipper Dan. Like that's what it is. He's like, he's looking at the camera and going, that reminds me of the time the Wild Stallion boys almost got caught by the sheriff. Ooh, no! That was almost Dukes of Hazzard, but then I forgot all the things he said. Looks like them Duke boys are in trouble. He came back to me. That's good.
I've never seen Dukes of Hazzard.
You're doing okay.
Okay.
There's Willie Nelson in it.
No, not movie, the TV show.
I was going to say, Jay Shankandrazar from Broken Lizard, which is, I think, our sixth movie, directed it.
Did he?
Yeah, the guy from Super Troopers.
I thought for whatever reason that was like a Thomas Lennon and Robert Ben Garrett had written that.
They wrote it, but they didn't direct it. He directed it.
Okay.
But we're talking about worst movies? That's unusual.
Isn't there some rule about that?
No.
No, it's the opposite. You never reference a good movie in your crap.
It's a sign of a bad movie when the person is watching a better movie on TV. That's the thing, because you can be like, we're that much better than Citizen Kane. That's why he's just pissing on it right now. That happens a lot in King movies, where they're watching King stuff because King wrote the script, so he's referencing King stuff and whatever.
Could you imagine if Stephen King wrote Bill and Ted?
oh my god, it'd be mildly bleaker, but it would be set in Maine instead of California.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't he do that one where he goes, the guy goes back in time and saves John F. Kennedy and causes some kind of crisis?
Yeah.
That was a miniseries, 11 something.
It was whatever the date Kennedy died. It was 11/23/63, I think.
And it was starring James Franco.
It's yeah, not bad. So I'm imagining like Stephen King doing this, like them messing around with time has all these horrible consequences.
I'll save this till the end, but I pitched a Bill and Ted 3 to Steve before we started this movie, and I think we can make it work.
Yeah.
It was he was almost amused.
I was almost amused.
There was a little chortle there. I don't want to say there was laughter, but there was like a little heh there.
Yeah. Hmm. Heh. Intriguing.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go on. First of all, they've missed their calling. We get George Carlin's intro that says, "This is the time I saved history. I'm the greatest person who's ever lived."
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut to them trying to film a music video. And Bill's holding the camera while... Ted's holding the camera while Bill does his intro. Then they flip around, etc. And then behind them, there's a mural that says Wild Stallions. And I want to pitch to you, they missed their calling. Because if they made that mural, they have a much better career in making murals than mm-hmm. they've ever had making movies. Or music, or anything else.
Well, they can't play their instruments. I think they make that joke.
Several times.
There's nothing romantic about making murals.
There's nothing romantic about their music, either. And they make that gag. They're like, in order to make it big, we need to have a rocking music video. Well, in order to make him rock a music video,
we need to make
Eddie Van Halen. And then it's like, 69! That is their third base.
Yeah.
Because whenever they run out of things to say, they just say...
69, dude.
69,
well, they say excellent or dude. That's like their comma.
And the most incredible thesaurus of adjectives that has ever been.
Yes. I so would have loved...
That's bodacious, dude.
According to the Tribune, Eddie Van Halen, after he saw the movie, said, I would have been in it if you'd asked me. It would have been so great if he was Rufus.
And if he had been able to stick it... No, first of all, you're not replacing George Carlin. You know what he should have done? He should have done Huey Lewis in Back to the Future and been the hard apple teacher. Back to the Future, it's Huey Lewis who says that their band is just too loud and that they shouldn't be in the Battle of the Bands. That's what it is. Anyway, so we get to this most triumphant. Then they have the Back to the Future scene where they realize they're late for class because they're rocking out and then the clock dings 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. or whatever. They cut to history class where we learn that Napoleon is a dead dude.
And that
short dude. Yeah.
Joan of Arc was Noah's wife.
That's right.
Which is a better joke. It's a Bruce Valanche joke, but it's a joke.
Yep.
That's a good joke. You have to be a dumb person to write that joke.
And again, I want to pitch that Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves made some pretty incredible characters. Like, this is, you know, this is not Abbott and Costello, but it's not bad.
No, it's not.
Because, like, they're just in class, and everyone else is kind of, like, pretending they're in high school, and they're just like, wow.
Well, they set the stage kind of because Beavis and Butthead came out after this, and they're pretty much Bill and Ted, except how Bill and Ted would actually be perceived, which is pathetically dumb.
Well, and what this is, in many ways, is a real version of Wayne's World. Because Wayne and Garth are these characters, but they're secretly brilliant, right? But these guys are as dumb as Wayne's World would actually be, right? These
now,
guys
are just dumb. Are Garth and Wayne secretly brilliant?
Dude, the way they talk to, like, Alice Cooper and stuff, like, they're like, they know a bunch. It's just the dumb characters that they kind of layer on top of stuff, right?
I thought that was Alice Cooper who explained.
Millie Walkay.
Yes.
People have asked if we're going to do Wayne's World. Wayne's World might be too good of a movie because this is still a garbage movie.
Maybe the second one because that was a hot mess right there.
Where they meet Jim Morrison in the desert.
Yeah.
This is the second time this month we're going to talk about Jim Morrison. Or first of two, actually. So stay tuned for that. The hard apple teacher who I was right played like a... I kept thinking he played a cop. He ends up being the chief of police in the second 48 Hours movie, which was a sequel that didn't need to happen. And they're told that they've failed pretty much every other section of the class. So if they don't pass their final report, they will fail overall and they will fail out of the grade, et cetera, et cetera. Or as I guess Ted says, we will fail most egregiously. flunk most egregiously.
They came up with two adjectives to describe their failure, which was actually kind of impressive.
I mean, There's a scene in the new 2011 Muppet movie, which I just rewatched, which is great.
Oh, that's a classic.
Where at one point Amy Adams is lying on the bed because she's pissed off at her husband or her fiance who ditched her, essentially. Mm-hmm. And she's reading through a thesaurus so she could come up with all the adjectives to describe how alone she was today.
Lighting them.
That was her me party, if I recall correctly.
That was exactly right. Yeah, that's just, yeah. I just rewatched that. I was quoting the songs earlier. I was like, I should watch that. Anyway, at that point, they are trying to figure out the report in Ted's room or in Bill's room.
Mm-hmm.
When Missy comes in with sandwiches for them.
Oh, Missy.
Bill's dad decides to nail her.
With that glorious leather skirt that wide shirt.
They do the Hunt for Teacher music as she bends over with the sandwiches, and then the dad comes in and kicks him out.
That's your mom, dude.
Stop checking out that sweet 80s cleavage. Eat these sandwiches. Yeah, and then they got kicked out.
Yeah. They were given money and everything.
You know, kids, get out of here. We got a bang, right? And then they made that joke, and then they did.
Mm. Well, it doesn't show them. It's just heavily implied because this is still a PG movie.
It's all about the implication here.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, and other than saying fags, I don't think you have to censor anything, which is, for weird hooies, that's the F word. You can say anything else, but that's pretty bad.
That was shocking.
It stops the movie dead because they, Bill finds out that Ted isn't dead. They hug each other and they go, fags.
Yeah.
And that really, that's quite jarring today. But that's like half an hour from now. But whatever. So at this point, they go down to Circle K and they're asking people for help.
When did Mongolia rule China? Or when did the Mongols rule China?
I don't know, kid. I just work here.
Which is great.
Work here, kid.
It's Doris Grau for 2 seconds. And that's when the time machine shows up. And we have George Carlin, who gets this kind of glowy sphere. It turns into something they would recognize, right? A
phone booth.
A phone booth, which for the kids out there used to be a thing. At that point, they're talking to Rufus. They're not sure what to believe. And then another version of them shows up. And then they get into a witty repartee.
I will just say about George Carlin, I was kind of disappointed because he's like this, big countercultural dude who was hilarious for that reason. And here he's just kind of bland.
Yeah, he doesn't really say a whole lot.
Exactly.
He's in it for all of 10 minutes. This is a paycheck. Six of those $10 million went to him.
I can only hope.
It was kind of corny, though. Corny was this when it... do you have any recollection of what this looked like? What was the perception of...
I was 3, so yes.
I saw it in the last day of school in my 10th grade world history class, and now I teach world history, so
the
circle has turned.
We watched it a bunch in band camp. I don't know why. This and the animated Transformers movie with... what's his name? Who was in that? What's that?
So you've got the touch and the power.
Orson Welles.
Orson Welles was Megatron.
Unicron.
Yikes.
Yeah, no kidding. You want to talk about how to end a career of one of the greatest people who've ever lived, or greatest movie people who've ever lived.
Mm-hmm. Also, that little factoid.
He was slumming it up for a paycheck for decades by that point.
He was selling peas.
Yeah.
That pea commercial on YouTube. Anyway...
We need to do that for myopia.
The pee commercial?
Well,
but the Paul Masson commercials?
Yeah, guys, write in if you want to do this. We have this season scheduled, but we have a couple gaps, let's say. So if you want to do something like that, write in. Anyway, but yeah, this is when they read each other's mind by knowing the number they were thinking of.
69, dudes!
That's when they decide to go back in history. The first people we pick up is after a scene from War and Peace.
Well, actually, I thought that was an accident because they just went to Austria when Napoleon was invading. And when they were going back to the future, accidentally dragged Napoleon along. They're like, well, we got one historical figure here, dude.
Well, but I thought Rufus intentionally went there.
No,
he's the guy that intentionally went there, but...
Napoleon ends up.
And they leave Napoleon in the care of one of their little brothers who...
Deacon, man.
Who may be the most interesting character in this because on one hand, he's unfazed by the fact that there's time travel. No one is really fazed by time travel.
No, there's a phone booth just sitting in the middle of lawns and nobody cares.
The dad barely looks up when something disappears out of the corner of his eye and is causing his lawn to glow.
Yeah.
But we end up... Oh, sorry, go.
I just wanted to say for the record, Deacon is my favorite character.
Oh, yeah.
He's not actually an actor. He's not the actor that's portraying a little brother. He's actually someone's little brother.
Yes.
He's spot on. He acts like mm-hmm. him. They ditch Napoleon. I like this.
What did they say? He was a dick?
Yeah, Napoleon was a dick. They ditched him.
Yeah, that's right.
No, it's the most accurate description of almost anyone we've had here, other than Freud pretending to, like, not speak English when he's getting arrested. But, he goes, Napoleon was a dick. We ditched him. Like, it's the most honest thing anyone says.
It really is.
He's almost the Superintendent Chalmers of The Simpsons. Like, the one real person in a world that's gone mad.
I'm not Super Nintendo Deacon.
I think I had the Deacon for Super Nintendo. You're right.
That was great.
Well, that's after, you know, the giant ice cream at Chuck E. Cheese. And then where else did I go?
Ziggy Piggy, Ziggy Piggy.
So, just really quickly here, going through my notes here, which get better and worse depending on how this goes.
After they pick up Napoleon, it's Billy the Kid, right?
Yeah, they go through the circuits of history.
Oh, those glorious circuits of history.
Which one of you said was like a Windows screensaver.
Yeah. No, it looked like a Windows 95 screensaver.
Which would have been impressive for 1989, let's be honest.
Well, to be fair, that was where all this budget went, the CGI throughout this, because, I mean, this is like Keanu Reeves' like fourth role that was worth mentioning, where he wasn't like extra number three. Steven Tobolowsky says, like, if your character has a name, that's good. If it's a career, it's okay. But if it's numbered, it's terrible. Like, this is his third okay role. But yeah, no, they look awful. And see the poster going the other direction.
Yep.
Along with the dancing baby from Ally McBeal. Yeah, but then we get to Billy the Kid, where we have a Western scene for 4 seconds, followed by, what, Socrates?
Socrates.
Where he philosophize with him, dude. My impressions are Ninja Turtles, I'm going to be honest.
I'm like 2 steps away from being Donald Trump with my slang impressions here.
Are you huge and bigly?
It's going to be a huge report, okay? The hugest.
And so he picks him up by philosophizing, and then we end up quoting Kansas, right?
Yes, dust in the wind.
We're all dust in the wind.
So why Billy the Kid?
Why not?
Apparently,
because Lincoln gives a speech at the end. Socrates is the funny guy with the funny name. Oh, where they can be silly and philosophize.
Billy the Kid is the flavor of the name.
It's a funny scene, but they did the bar fight. But it's like Lincoln was a more important character. Socrates was a more important character. Like, for Christ's sake, Freud was a more important character. Like, why?
You mean in history?
No, in the movie, for the movie.
Well, there's that good scene in the mall where Billy the Kid's trying to hit on those women and showing his poster going, we're from history.
It's true, but he's like the intro.
Well, who organized them to save Bill and Ted from being executed? Probably Billy the Kid, because Socrates can't even speak English.
That's a running joke, by the way. First, Bill and Ted never pronounce anybody's name correctly. Secondly, they all somehow understand them, even though they speak different languages.
Mm-hmm. I like to think that they were going to get Socrates, but they can only afford the Kroger Plus brand. Socrates.
Oh, okay.
But no, yeah, I guess to your point, if this was a bigger budget movie, this would have been an SNL ensemble movie, because everyone's on screen for like 4 seconds each, mm-hmm. kind of, especially the second half where they pick up 5 people in a montage.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that aspect, Billy the Kid is kind of a main character compared to the rest of them. But you're right, he's still on screen for... He's on screen for 15 minutes, but only has 3 lines.
But he gets
lines.
His own kind of quote-unquote origin story, right? They go and visit Billy the Kid in his own time. Lincoln gives a speech at the end, and they're just like, oh, yeah, Lincoln, let's just yank him into this telephone booth with the, you know, the, and he's just in there. He's part of the montage, but...
What's that Scott Bakula show? A Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
Which came first, this or Quantum Leap?
I want to say Quantum Leap. Let me check.
But, like, that's what this is. This is an entire season of Quantum Leap in a montage, right? Because they're like, you know, Scott, you've got to go back to save Billy the Kid or whatever. Make sure he dies. And, like, it's like 4 minutes instead of an hour.
They actually overlap. Quantum Leap came out in 1989, so.
Oh, my God.
It's just as cheesy as Quantum Leap, too. I love it.
With the same budget of an entire season. So there you go.
Yep.
Except
no lessons were learned.
So we get Billy the Kid, we get Socrates, we get, and then they end up in medieval Europe to look for a king.
Spoilers, they don't find him.
Yes.
No, they almost bring back, quote, that goat dude.
It was not excellent, dude. They couldn't get Henry VIII.
Yeah.
But then Ted is looking up at a balcony, and Bill's like, "What are you looking at?" And he's like, "Dude, I'm in love." And then we end up with the medieval babes.
Mm-hmm.
The princess babes.
And there's this weird Monty Python bit of this movie where they end up in a castle. And I don't say Monty Python because it's in a castle, but like the humor, like even the guy who thinks he's killed Ted is kind of a Monty Python character.
Kind right? of.
He's even dressed like one of the French people and whatever. But yeah, they end up meeting these royal babes. They nearly get put to death because they insult the father.
Throwing shade at the Iron Maiden, it's all off their head, you know?
Yeah. Iron Maiden, excellent!
Excellent.
I mean, it's funny because quoting these years, Wayne's World inspired a lot, but they may have inspired even more.
I think they inspired Wayne's World.
Well, I mean, Wayne's World was the sketch first, but the second movie was after this. But I'm thinking of like Beavis and Butthead. I'm thinking of these characters that are kind of these guys as washouts, because they're right. Wayne's World is a comedy because it succeeds. In real life, they'd just be failures. These guys are failures. Like, this is the most masturbatory fantasy of anything. We're the not only band that succeeds, but we're the band that saves the universe. I mean, my God. Even the Beatles failed to end the Cold War. Like, come on, man.
It was very cheesy, and it felt especially cheesy because George Carlin was on Passing It Down. Like, they prescribed to him not only a personality, but a weird origin story, and he had to just come, you know, get the band back together so we could save the universe. And you're like, no, George Carlin, you're the one that's supposed to be saying fuck on TV a lot. Like, what is this?
Shit, piss, fuck, cut, cock, so motherfucker, and tits.
Exactly.
I do like, I mean, you know, it's a fantasy world the day that Alex Winters and Keanu Reeves give George Carlin an autograph instead of the other way around.
Yeah.
He was on scene for 2 days. He didn't sign anything for anybody. Mm-hmm. Not even the director who hired him. And I do love how, I guess this is in, like, really a deep cut, but he's doing his wonderful wino kind of, like, he goes, yeah, man, at the end. Yeah. I was like, he's practically doing a voice off his FM and AM album. Anyway.
That is a deep cut.
Yeah, I've watched way too much of Carlin and listened to Carlin and everything. Then we get our montage, right? Like, they go to the future incidentally, right?
With that leader with the glorious white stripe in his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, these were Star Trek characters for sure.
Oh, yeah.
The black guy had a flat top with like a Bride of Frankenstein kind of laser bolt.
Oh, it was glorious.
The highest of shoulder pads. It was something. And they get this kind of, and then they look around and they're dancing in posters, and the people who are worshiping them kind of come out and they're signing stuff and all that kind of thing. And then we get this kind of weird future moment where they each get a line, right? He goes, Bill goes, be excellent to each other. And Ted says, party on, dudes. Mm-hmm. And then we get Zach back.
And then their official greeting is slow air guitar.
Yeah, it sure is.
I don't know why that depresses you. I thought that was a great way to greet each other. I kind of want to do that now.
That's how they greeted each other when they met each other at the first scene.
Mm.
Right? Like, they did the...
Yeah.
Joe Satriani guitar riff. But anyway, at this point we get the montage, right? That's when mm-hmm. they pick up Beethoven, Joan of Arc, Genghis Khan all at once. And...
they bribe Genghis Khan with a Twinkie. It was great.
They bribe Genghis Khan with a Twinkie.
And, yeah. That kind of brings the whole cast together. And then finally we end up getting Abraham Lincoln, which they do with a Bugs Bunny bit, right? As he's writing a farewell address or whatever he's writing.
Yeah.
Where he goes, Candy Graham! Like, it's again, it's like a Bugs Bunny bit.
Yeah.
And that's when we get everyone together. Then we cut back to Donnie, who decides to ditch Napoleon after bowling like Donnie from the Big Lebowski.
That's why we called him Donnie just then.
Yeah. And then
he seriously looks like Donnie too, with the pants and the red shirt.
Yeah. He gets a strike and goes, woo!
Throwing rocks tonight. Were you listening to Bill's story, dude?
God damn it.
At least this point we've seen Napoleon.
So you roll in the Shabbos.
This is welcome to the podcast for the Big Lebowski, everyone.
Another movie that we're probably not going to talk about because it's too good, but we'll see. I don't know. My will is weak. And
no,
that would be more of a table read than a movie. Exactly. We would just reread. Yeah.
It's not worth it.
It is a brilliant film. It's really well done. But yeah, and so at this point, we've seen Napoleon eat too much ice cream and be kind of jerked there, and then Deacon's finally done. Bill and Ted, thinking they finally finished the report after running into themselves again, of course, end up going back to Deacon, who says he ditched Napoleon because Napoleon's a dick.
Oh, that was also a good part because it shows they were actually paying attention when they wrote the script to include that scene where they meet each other again. But instead of doing the entire scene, they just cut away.
Well, and they did the thing where they actually have the people in the time machine and behind is Phil. So we see things like, I will give this movie credit. It is stupid, and like the Metascore is like a 45 or something like that. But they set up stakes, they set up a timetable, they follow the rules that they set up for the most part. I don't know. For a stupid comedy, it's actually much more complex. I wouldn't put it on the same level as Ghostbusters, but for a sci-fi comedy, they keep their rules.
Back in the 80s, when you were making these tentpoles, people actually paid attention to that sort of thing. They wanted it to try and at least be somewhat decent.
And it's still funny.
Yeah.
So credit where credit's due.
Not always, but a lot of the time.
I mean, it's up there with Galaxy Quest. And Galaxy Quest doesn't call people fags, so it makes it better than this.
They do?
They don't.
Oh.
Thank God.
Yeah.
That's a little late to say that out loud. But whatever. At that point, Bill and Ted go back home, where Ted is told he has to do his chores. So we have a useless montage where people are doing chores at Ted's house, and people are introduced. I do like that gag where they have to make up lines for Missy. So this is Bob Genghis Khan. I wrote that one down. I wrote down Bob Genghis Khan in my notes. So I'm glad I figured out why I wrote Bob Genghis Khan. But whatever. At this point, we figured out Napoleon has been ditched because he's a dick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they all go to the mall, because the whole point of the essay that they're supposed to be writing is pick someone from each era that we talked about in history. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which apparently includes medieval Europe, actually ancient Greece. Probably Genghis Khan is pre-medieval.
Medieval Asia, I think.
Right, okay. Medieval Europe, so 100 Years of War, right? Joan of Arc and Henry VIII, so that's Renaissance. Sigmund Freud, which is early modern Europe, like late Renaissance. You have Europe. They also have westward expansion and American Civil War, which is, I guess, whatever. And so all that.
So they skipped the founding of America? That's the most important year in history, damn it.
I've been reading some literature I'd like to give all of you.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Is it from the
Second Amendment, goddammit?
Is it from the liberal mainstream media?
Liberals never even looked at this paper. But at this point, they're supposed to be talking about what people from each of these eras would think of modern San Dimas. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill and Ted take them to the mall, because if it's an 80s movie and the mall doesn't show up, it doesn't technically count as an 80s movie?
That's such a cringeworthy point. You're in Southern California in the 80s, and the best thing to do is just take them to the mall.
That's just what people did.
You can go to a sporting goods store. You can buy dresses. I mean, fuck the beach.
You can buy Jane Fonda workout videos.
And Beethoven can utterly jam at a piano store.
And synths, yeah.
Why wasn't Napoleon surfing in this movie? Why did they take him to a water park?
Because that's what existed in San Dimas, I guess.
I mean, but I would have loved if they were, like, going to the multiplex and, like, someone sat down and watched, like, Back to the Future 3 and they're like, hey, this looks familiar. And they had to take him out real, real quick, like.
I would have preferred it be a gag where Billy the Kid thinks the shootout's actually happening and just pulls out his gun in the middle of a theater.
That's a good gag.
Yeah.
Or they go to Duck Hunt and, like, they go to an arcade and he actually shoots the screen with his actual sidearm.
Yeah.
Which, again, Back to the Future 2, they go to the arcade and Tobey Maguire's the kid playing.
No, it's
Duck
Elijah
Hunt.
Wood.
Elijah Wood, thank you. Little prick.
That's like a baby's toy.
Thank you for. Gary Busey just shows up and chomps the crust. He eats the seat like a pop-up video, just with this big old horse feet. I'm Gary Busey. Fine, I'm done. But anyway.
Instead of they have a cave troll, it's they have Gary Busey.
Exactly.
He tries to eat Elijah Wood.
Mm-hmm.
But what ends up happening is they all get arrested. Which should have been in all of their speeches. I was here for 5 minutes and you started to arrest time immigrants. But that's what it was, right?
They reference it with one person. They reference it once with Genghis Khan totally destroying that sporting goods store or whatever it was.
He totally destroyed China, and I'm told that 20 minutes ago he totally destroyed the sporting goods store.
There it was.
So they do this bit in jail where everyone's arrested, and it becomes, again, like a video game segment. And I think Bill's logic is, he goes, dude, give me your dad's keys. He goes, I don't have my dad's keys. He goes, he lost them 2 days ago. He goes, but what if we went back in time and took his keys? We can't. We'd be late for our reports.
So let's do it after the report.
If we did that, we could leave the keys here. This bit is exactly how I would use time travel, right? Because it's like, it's not big things. This is not big things. This is like, I forgot where I left something, but what if you went back to before you lost it and you could find it again? Like, it's the most practical use, you know?
It really is. It's just plot development right there. Speaking of travel's abused everywhere, but it's cute when it's abused, like, let's just move the plot forward. Instead of just having keys, let's explain quickly where they came from and fucking move on.
Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, that's where they come from.
I really appreciate that.
Because, like, Napoleon would be, like, honestly, he'd be, like, tenting his fingers, like, if I had this electricity, I could take over the world! But no, it's like, we use it to vacuum the floor when it gets too dirty, right? Like, we use it for the most practical things. That's what it is. If I had time travel, I could take over the universe! No, I just wouldn't lose my keys as often because I could go back to the last time I knew I had my keys and make sure I knew where I put them.
All Napoleon cared about was pushing kids out of the way at that water park.
At Waterloo.
Oh, yeah.
I knew, like, the guy. It was like, what are water things I can think of? Waterloo!
I don't think it's gonna work, dude.
And that translucent suit, too. That translucent swimsuit.
He's wearing a bathing suit that has a tricolor pinned to it.
Yep.
Oh, that's so great. Anyway, so we should keep moving so we can wrap this up. Eventually, they find Napoleon. He breaks him out of jail after probably one of the funniest bits in the movie, where everything is kind of figured out because they remember to drop a trash can here, leave a key here, have a tape recorder with his voice on it saying, hey, Dad, come over here, Dad. Dad.
I also like that shot of Joan of Arc praying in her prison cell.
Merci. The French here is not bad. The IMDb trivia, the first goof is, Napoleon looks like he would have eaten ice cream, but like he's surprised by ice cream. But ice cream was actually invented before that, so he should know what ice cream is.
Is that word for word from what IMDb says?
No, someone looked at Wikipedia and said it was Catherine de' Medici. But I will say, he doesn't look surprised. No, he's the French word for it.
Yeah.
Napoleon's flip-flopping French all over the place with an American accent from a B actor. Mm-hmm. They even gave him a cute little bowl cut.
Yes, they did.
He's an adorable old Napoleon. But anyway, at the end of this, we get this report. The report does nothing. It's weird. It has pyrotechnics and it's timed pretty well. And it even looks kind of like the way Cinematic Titanic does their things now, with everyone standing on risers off at an angle with the time machine in the middle. All right, Sandy. Okay, we first have to talk about the Buzz. The older brother from Home Alone, like the Buzz guy from this movie, who's giving his speech, he's like,
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. San Dimas football rules! And then everyone cheers, and so he wins the report.
Except the teachers who are all just shaking their heads.
The teachers were kind of pulling their eyes.
Although, if they gave Bill and Ted an A+, that kid bumped his grade from a C to a B-, because that was bullshit.
More a C to a C+, I would think. You're a teacher. You wouldn't do that.
Oh no, I fail kids left and right. But that also that girl who said, so instead of saying let them eat cake, she would have said let them eat fast food.
Even though she never even said let them eat cake.
And it's the exact wrong thing, right? Because they're so poor they can't afford bread, so let them eat cake, right? Like that's the idea. It's supposed to be really offensive, rich over poor. They wouldn't say let them eat fast food. Like that's the complete opposite. It's stupid. This is so stupid. They should have failed this report.
So Hollywood writers.
If my students invented time travel to pass a report, I might have given them an A.
But they didn't invent time travel. They were given
that's
it.
That's my question. Does the audience think time travel exists after this? Is the world destroyed?
No.
No. I think this is bullshit, right?
They think that they took time, and this is why they passed. Because they took time to hire actors and to train them. about, you know, what they should say.
But that's not the point!
This isn't actually Genghis Khan.
Okay, but like... Okay, so there's a second movie, right, which we already talked about. If you can find that episode, you should maybe listen to it. I don't know, I got really sad by the end because I was bummed out at how bad that movie was. But... if you were a high school student and these kids had been flunkies the whole year, A, you would have thought this is bullshit, right?
Yeah.
If you're the teacher and they'd failed literally everything else in the history of this class, they plagiarized this, they stole this, they paid someone else to do this for them, this is not real. But second, if you buy that this is real, they're world famous. Like, this is,
yeah.
This isn't even the kid who, like, got drunk and streaked across the football field, right? This is... a once-in-a-lifetime thing that everyone knows, they don't become losers again. Like, they have to leave town.
They would have won a Nobel Prize for inventing time travel.
Assuming Joan of Arc teaching her soldiers jazzercise and all those other things they did doesn't change history a whole lot.
That's the other thing. Why didn't, you know, bringing Abraham Lincoln to the future do anything?
I'm sorry this isn't a perfect movie, Daniel.
Oh, well,
just a myth, Dan. You can't actually mess with time,
Mussolini
man.
There.
Yes.
Ill Daniel is always right.
Oh, but I don't know. So this report comes up. They stand up like they're on the cover of his Van Halen t-shirt that he's wearing the whole time.
Oh, and after the report, there's people lighting lighters in a high school gym.
A ton of them.
Yeah.
This is the 80s, dude. It doesn't matter.
Well, because Billy the Kid shot a light out, too.
But he's a white guy. And then we get this report, which is done as, again, another montage, which is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
We have Billy the Kid as the MC. He's the flavor of the group.
Of,
and then we go through the whole thing. We have...
Wait. I just realized there's like 7 or 8 of these historical characters, right? It's the Wu-Tang Clan.
There we go. We got Wu-Tang upstage.
Diversify.
The first of all, the whitest kids to see Wu-Tang in 88. I mean, I'm not going to talk about what all the reports is. The only thing worth mentioning is Freud, who's psychoanalyzing Ted. And he goes, you're what? No, please.
You want to talk about
one of them? I just remember, you know, this whole thing involving Ted's dad and their relationship, and then the other one's like, I got a mild Oedipus complex, man.
I do love Missy in this, and she's just up there. She's hitting on the teacher again.
Oh yeah,
her relationship with all these guys is right out of a college boob comedy that they didn't film, right? Because she's like literally making moves on everyone. If I recall correctly, in the sequel, she's divorced Bill's dad, is now married to Ted's dad.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
They do the same jokes in reverse. Or Alex Winter goes, dude, she's your mom.
Oh, God.
You haven't seen the sequel.
No, I haven't, but that just sounds terrible.
So it broke me, Steve, as you recall when you were there.
It's got a couple of scenes.
But it's got, did it
break your heart, Fredo?
I think our conclusion was like, if you can catch like the heaven and hell scenes on YouTube, do it and don't bother with it.
I mean, then you'll listen to the episode. You'll hear the second it broke us. The report clearly still would fail, but they pass, whatever, mm-hmm. It's the plot.
Oh, one thing before also included in the report is Napoleon explaining his Russian invasion strategy and going, dude, I don't think that's going to work.
Which is great because it's the Eddie Azar joke of Hitler clearly never played Risk as a kid.
Yeah.
But yeah, and he goes, no, and then he smacks him. But then it ends with Lincoln saying, first of all, terrible joke, 4 score in a few minutes ago, whatever.
4 score in 7 minutes.
selling to the crowd, man. Lincoln knew how to tell a joke, and he was a bartender.
Yeah,
he did both things. He was an old soak. They pass the report. Presumably, they take everyone home. We don't see that, but whatever. Then Rufus shows back up somehow to get the time machine, which goes away somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings a CD for them to sign.
A CD from 700 years in the future.
That's right.
Oh, they were so wrong. Bill and Ted sign it, and he brings with them the babes.
Who were introduced to something called a mall and credit cards.
So they're dressed like... They're going to prom.
They're dressed like Misty, basically.
With their hair up and dresses. He gives them guitars without tuners at the top. And he goes, can I jam with you? It's like, my kids are huge fans of yours. I want to jam with you. And he does a Satriani riff. Or rather, someone wearing his jacket does a Satriani riff. Carlin is just making orgasm faces while he does it. And then he's like, and they're like, of course, Rufus will play with you. Whoa, Reaganomics. And they start rocking.
Whoa, Rockus Dukakis.
Bossa Nova.
Rockus Dukakis might be my favorite thing you've just said. Ever.
Maybe if he'd been a bit more raucous, he would have won.
Rockus Dukakis, Christ. Okay, so they start playing and they're terrible. One of the medieval babes, neither of which I think get names. One is on drums, and they've never seen drums before.
Did we catch them in the credits? Are they just medieval babe one and two?
Yeah.
Blonde one and blonder one.
Yeah.
And then the other one's on keyboards, and they're all terrible. And the last line of the movie is George Carlin looking to camera and going, they get better.
Although, from what you said by the sequel, they don't.
You need to watch it.
Oh, they get better.
Because God made rock and roll to you. Gave rock and roll to you. Anyway, so that's the movie. In 700 years, CDs are going to still matter, guys.
Yeah.
So save them.
Well, I mean, vinyl matters again after 30, 40 years, so hey.
Can you imagine when we're older?
CDs.
A kid walking around with a Walkman.
This can't come back.
We're cool again, guys.
I had that album when it first came out 75 years ago. They used to be called Weezer.
I'm not quoting Weezer. I'm just having a heart attack.
Buddy Holly was a person. And he looked like him.
Those 500-page binders of CDs better never make it.
Oh, man.
Oh, no, yeah.
And then I would have all of mine alphabetized with the burned ones in alphabetical order, too.
Oh, that is the
saddest thing. I have mixed mixes going back to ninth grade.
Got the party mix.
Yeah. I have all my. I still have all my CDs, but the CD player in my clock radio is broken.
Better.
This is my gonna seduce a babe mix.
Weird Al.
That's right. It's mostly what we have.
Yeah.
Because nothing is funnier than a girl laughing at you during a beach. Anyway.
Nice.
So guys, as per usual, let's go around the horn here and talk about how great this movie was. Steve-O, you're first.
I thought this movie was great.
Good.
Yeah, like, what else do we need to say about... Actually, no, George Carlin was a huge disappointment, and the montage, I did appreciate it, but I felt like if there was more montage and less bullshit... This would have been a more memorable movie, but like, it's a classic. You know, if you haven't seen this movie, watch it. If you have seen this movie, then just listen to us talk about it and watch it again if you want. Or don't. It's fine.
You're making a really passionate plea there.
Yeah, that's how I feel about this movie. Like, you know, watch it or don't. Like, do whatever you want. It's cool.
Vote or die, bitch.
Yeah.
Matt.
It was better when I saw it in 10th grade, but it's got a lot of parts that still hold up just because that's how silly it is.
Yeah.
So it's entertaining most of the time. There's some spots that are kind of dull.
Perfect. Daniel.
It reminds me of that Twitter feed, 80s Don Draper, which is where I got the Dukakis line from. I thought that was his actual campaign quote, but never mind. It's silly. It's light. It has the potential to be a lot deeper. It doesn't necessarily go onto those paths. I, for one, for example, thought that Napoleon walking around 80s California would have been a funnier movie. But this is still actually pretty funny. And I remember seeing it on cable when I was 12 and a latchkey kid. They used to air it on HBO a lot.
Yeah.
So it still brought back those good memories. So, yeah, go ahead. If you haven't seen it yet, what's wrong with you?
And I mean, for me, I memorized more of this movie. Luckily, I was mature enough not to just quote it the whole time, but I did a few times. I broke my rule. I will say it's much stupider at parts than you think, but I mean, frankly, for a comedy, it holds together much better than most we've seen. It's enjoyable throughout, and although I will say it might be more of a guy movie than I realized. Some of the ladies that were with us didn't laugh as much. My wife thought it was funny. Aaron and Scott watched it with us. Aaron didn't crack a smile once. She looked broken. However, like I said before, we will be back. So here's how this is going to work. The last Friday of every month, with the exception of October, which we'll get to, of course, is going to be our new spinoff, which is TV-based and led by Scott, Aaron, and myself. It's called Myopia Afternoons, and we're going to take you through your TV shows we watched as a kid. And once a month, we're going to do it. And next week's episode is going to be Animaniacs, so buckle in for that.
Can they do the 90s G.I. Joe that had Iron Claw in it instead of Cobra Commander?
G.I. Joe Extreme!
Yes, that one right there.
I'll tell you what, guys, you need to write into the mailbag because we're going to go through everything you could possibly want. We are going to still finish the rest of Mission Briefing, but we're already up to Skyfall the week after that, followed by, should I tell them the next movie we're going to do or should we wait? Do you want to tease it?
Oh, yes, let's.
Yes.
It's the biggest budget horror movie you didn't see, but I watched in middle school, A, and B, someone who wasn't in Back to the Future takes a nap the entire time while Owen Wilson dies having sex. So we'll go there. So tune in next week and every future week for the rest of humanity as we put another little bit of your piece, of your past, of your
piece. You're still thinking of Missy, aren't you?
He's trying to. As we put another little bit of your past on trial. You'd think after 200 of these I'd get that right.
What movie?
Owen? And I'm going to leave that in until I cut it off.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is produced by Nick Hoffman. Our editors are Aaron Greer, Candace Burns, and Nick Hoffman. Our theme song is Caroline, performed by the Serenaders. Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network. Find us on Facebook and DudeLetter.com.
You do realize this is a Bill and Ted movie, not a Ninja Turtles movie, and I realize that crossover is difficult.
I see.
Excellent,
What's the difference, really, when you come right down to it?
They sound like Ninja Turtles.
Is that Keanu Reeves still has a career and Corey Haim doesn't?
He's dead.
Feldman.
I was about to say, Corey Haim doesn't
have
a career.
Wasn't Feldman Donatello?
He was.
Audacious dude.
I was about to say, though, Corey Haim doesn't have a career because he's dead.
That would happen. Which was the one who found Jesus? Was that Feldman?
I think maybe.
Because he's in all those Left Behind movies.
No, that was Kirk Cameron.
Oh, that's Kirk Cameron! They were at the same Coke parties, though, in the 80s.
Oh, sure they were.
Okay. I mean...
But Kirk Cameron didn't have any fun, and so that's...
Yeah, he was the one that...
No, he was the one who ended up, like... His true Hollywood story ended 20 years ago.
Well, I know that. I was saying I read this like a Christianity Today article about like his life and how he just never really
I can just picture him showing up in a sweater vest and khakis to a cocaine party going, hello, I'm here to have a good time.
The reason Michael J. Fox had a career is he said no to those parties. Right? I mean, because they were on the show at the same time.
The article was talking about how he was not like Mike Seaver at all, because Mike Seaver, the character, probably would have loved
cocaine. I have never seen Family Ties, like, ever.
Although, I mean...
Was it Family Ties or Growing Pains? Wasn't he
arrested for doing a lot of coke?
No.
All the cocaine?
That was Gary Busey.
No. Gary Busey was arrested for having teeth like a horse, for impersonating Mr. Ed.
Wrong Hollywood star who gets religion and then stars in crap in mediocre Christian movies.
Gary Busey stars himself in like 75% of his movies.
My favorite, and you guys have to look this movie up, is Hyder in the House. They did an episode of it on We Got Good Movies and I found it.
Hydra in the House?
Hyder. He's a homeless guy and these people are building a house and so he lives in the attic and falls in love with the family.
That was a TV movie from the 70s. Bad Ronald. Have you seen that TV show they had on Comedy Central called I'm with Busey?
Yeah, when he would just like abuse the cameraman that followed him around.
Yeah, pretty much.
Great. You get the feeling that someone else signed the contract half the time because he's like, what are you doing there, camera guy? There's a horror movie somewhere where it's like a dark room and like woman's watching TV and then behind him you just see the teeth just like chomp, chomp, chomp.